Great to have you along here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about how to reduce plastic waste on the show right now. Spend the next hour doing that with our guest. A couple of community members in Viroqua who have come together to address the plastic problem, along with other folks from Viroqua. Kitty Pityer, one of our guests. Kitty, welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you, Larry. I enjoy being here.
Well, and great to have you with us. And Philothea Beeson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
They are members of a group. The group is called Viroqua Plastic Free, and Philothea is a founding member of the group. And as we talk with them, want to hear from you. Have you worked on reducing plastic waste in your community? What is your community doing? What are you doing as an individual? Let us know what solutions have worked for you. Love to hear from you. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Why is plastic waste something that we should really care that much about, Philothea?
Well, I think the obvious problem is landfills and just plastic just accumulating, and we're just not able to keep up with it. And if you hear about countries, say, that are on coasts of, say, the Mediterranean or the Atlantic Ocean or something like that, they're just a huge amount of plastic. Beaches and so forth are just clogged with plastic. And part of that problem is that we really, recycling is a myth that was kind of passed on by the plastic industry, because really only about 5 to 7% of plastic is recycled or can be recycled, and the rest is just going either into landfills or just, you know, just streams and rivers and going down into the ocean. And then we have the problem of ocean animals and birds and so forth eating plastic. We've learned so much about plastic since we started in about 2018, but plastic breaks down, but it never really composts. It never becomes part of the earth. So it makes little tiny, tiny particles, and even smaller particles, I mean microscopic particles, but they're still plastic. And so animals and birds and so forth in the ocean are consuming these little pieces, thinking they're food. So that's a problem. And now we're finding that plastic is actually being detected in our own bloodstreams, even in embryos. So, I mean, plastic is just ingested.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a huge problem. It's just,
so,
yeah.
How much, and maybe Kitty can get involved here, how much plastic pollution are we generating here in Wisconsin? I mean, how many pounds per person and that sort of thing?
I don't really know how many pounds per person of specifically plastic waste. The DNR reports that the average person creates about 4.7 pounds of trash per day, which sounds like a lot.
Yeah, per day, yeah.
Per day, yeah. But, you know, part of the problem is that over the last 70, 75 years, plastic has just become an enormous problem. It really, the history is kind of interesting, because the plastic manufacturers were making a fortune in World War II by using plastic in helmet liners, for parachutes, for airplane windshields. And when World War II ended, their income stream ended, and that's when they focused their attention on the consumer. And that's when the upticking in all the consumer products became much more popular. And so we have gone from the production of about 2 million tons of plastic in 1950 to roughly 400 to 450 million metric tons last year.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was doing the math in my head as you were talking, and if there's what, we have 5 million people in the state of Wisconsin? If everybody's doing 5 pounds a day, that's 25 million pounds a day of...
Right. Yeah.
That's a lot of waste that we're producing. Well, and I should mention, we recently talked to a UW Superior professor about her research on microplastics in the Great Lakes and beyond. She's doing worldwide research on it now as well. If you go to WPR.org/Larry, you can hear that conversation. It was just recently. I can't remember the date, but Claire will probably give me the date, or Jeff will, and I'll pass that along. So wildlife, when I think about wildlife, I think about what lives, the wildlife living in the seas and the waters and so forth, but it also can affect those that are walking around on the ground, you know, bears and animals.
Right. They're not going to eat a, you know, plastic milk jug or something like that, but I think what we've really realized and didn't really know, I'm not sure if Kitty would agree with me, but I mean, we didn't really understand about microplastics, and we didn't understand about the effect of heat on plastic and the ability of plastic to transfer harmful chemicals. Plastic in the ocean, you know, kind of connects with other poisons and toxic things that are in the water. And, you know, it's not pure plastic, but it's a joining of plastic and other toxic factors. And then the microplastics is where it gets into, you know, our bloodstream and so forth. I mean, it's tiny. These are tiny.
It very, very tiny. Well, how did Viroqua Plastic Free come about? How did the group come to be?
Well, I was in the founding group, and we didn't really plan to have a group of people. Someone just put a notice in the newspaper, does anybody want to preview some films about the plastic problem? And so I showed up, and there were a few other people. We looked at about 5 different films in different people's basements, and that was an introduction. And then we said, well, shall we form a little group? And that is what we did. And the group changed personnel for a little bit, and then we kind of have gotten to be, we are the 6 people that have been working together really for a number of years now. That we started, I think, about 2018. We took the best of them, and we started a film festival, which went to different places, libraries, parks, bars, and people came in, and that was, we just found out who was interested. We started gathering people on a mailing list, then we started gathering and saying, well, what can we do? So our mission statement is really education and awareness, because there's an awful lot of projects that you could do beyond that to take a lot of manpower. But our main goal is to just make people aware in any way we can.
Makes sense. And you mentioned films, and Sue had sent us an email and said, well, people might use less single-use plastic if they watch 2 documentaries, one titled Plastic People, it's a Canadian-made documentary, and the other, We Are All Plastic People Now, PBS. Both are available on YouTube. It documents the impact of on the environment and human and animal health, and Sue says, very enlightening.
Yeah, I think of the Tin Man and the Wizard of Oz. I mean, are we all going to just kind of turn into plastic people?
Well, I hope not. That's for sure. Mike in Evansville sent us an email. What's the best way to handle automotive plastic waste? And I have sitting in my house, I backed up and broke my rear taillight. And now I had to get a new one. And so the old plastic pieces are sitting in the back floor of my car because I don't really know what to do with them. But, and Mike's talking about bumper covers, dashboards, engine covers, that sort of thing.
Most of those items are likely not going to be recyclable. One of the things that the plastic manufacturers started very early on was giving people the impression that plastic was in fact recyclable and recycled. And, you know, the little recycle number on a plastic container does not guarantee that it is recyclable, does not guarantee that it will be recycled. It's simply the polymer, the resin number of the type of plastic that was used. So from the very beginning, the plastic industry understood full well that recycling was not going to be the answer. They knew full well that they were really setting us on a trajectory of where we are today. You know, it was as far back as the 1950s that one of the plastic trade organizations started the Keep American Beautiful campaign, putting the responsibility for all this plastic waste on the consumer rather than the manufacturer. And each municipality has their own rules about what they can accept and what is recyclable. It started out, you know, decades ago where landfills or recycling centers were able to sell the plastic they collected to a company that would, in fact, recycle them. But people quickly learned that recycled plastic is not the same quality as virgin plastic. And so now oftentimes recycling centers have to pay to have their plastic recycling items taken away. And if there is no market, then that plastic goes in the landfill. So it really makes quite a conundrum for people. And what we advocate is not so much let's figure out how to recycle this, but how do we reduce our individual consumption of plastic? And then also, how can we encourage businesses and the manufacturers to reduce their production of plastic? And the problem is plastic is light, it's cheap, it's effective, but the convenience that it offers us is creating or has created the problem that we're facing today.
Talking today with a couple of guests, Kitty Pityer and Philothea Beeson are members of Viroqua Plastic Free, talking about plastic recycling, what we can do. And they're outlining some things here that we can certainly expand on as we move along here. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts. We have some good emails up. You can call us, the number 800-642-1234, if you've got some thoughts or ideas. 800-642-1234. Or you could shoot an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today about a Viroqua Plastic Free group that is working to rid their community of plastic waste, maybe one bag at a time, but doing it through education. And they're getting us a pretty good education as we move along today. Kitty Pityer and Philothea Beeson, are members of Viroqua Plastic Free. Great to have them with us. Talking about one end of the spectrum that you were describing earlier, Philothea, Mary Jo and Antigo emailed us, Styrene Products in Schofield, Wausau area, accepts clean tape-free styrofoam for recycling Monday through Thursday until 2 o'clock. No food containers or spongy packing materials, styrofoam only.
Hey, wonderful. I wonder where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, styrofoam is something you just, it would be better if we just didn't buy it or use it. Right, Kitty?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, part of our mission is really getting the word out to the public, you know, to our community members and certainly your listeners here as well, because there's just so much damage that plastic does to us. And when you look around, you know, go in any grocery store or the average big box store, everything is packaged in plastic, and people walk out with their 20 plastic bags. And it's important for people to know that those items are not going to be recycled. No matter what the symbol says, no matter what you're told, you know, the figure that Philothea mentioned earlier, you know, 5 to 6% of plastic is recycled. The rest of it ends up in the environment or in the landfill. And because it does not biodegrade, like, you know, a piece of wood or a banana peel, it photodegrades. It breaks down into these tinier pieces that never go away. You know, because of our use of plastic over the last 75 years, geologists in years to come are going to find this layer of plastic all around the globe, just like we find layers of dirt and things like that, because it just does not go away. It becomes microscopic. We can no longer see it, but it's still there.
Yeah. Sergeant Rob in Wheaton, Illinois, we'll go to you. What's on your mind?
First of all, I want to acknowledge the education you guys are doing. I'm 80 years old, so it really matters that we talk to our children and grandchildren. I applaud you guys for what you're doing. I wanted to call your attention to a great bit of educational material for background. It's not from NPR, not from PBS, but it is a independent documentary, and it's called Plastic Planet. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it. It's a little bit out of date now, but it's relevant in the sense that it talks about where does the plastic go? What can it do? And, it's a wake-up call.
Yeah. Bob, Rob, thank you very much for calling. Are you familiar with Plastic Planet, either of you?
I think I watched every single plastic documentary that I could find when I joined the group in early 2019. I'm sure I saw it. The story is always the same. And, you know, the people that are doing these documentaries, you know, some of them were very passionate, you know, contacting plastic manufacturers and things like that, and just, you know, hearing the runaround of, oh, no, this is benign product. And I think it's something that it's so ubiquitous now that people don't even see it. They don't even think
about
it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, one of the things we have done is work with children, and we've had a lot of really successful programs with kids. And the first thing they do is all the kids raise their hand and say, "We recycle." So
yeah.
They've really gotten that idea, and they think that they're separating plastic and taking it to the dump or something like that. And so, unfortunately, we have to, you know, let people know that it's not enough to recycle. But we have done some things that have been pretty effective, and one of them was we made a plastic monster that was a costume that people could wear at a fair or
mm-hmm.
public event, and we safety pinned 500 plastic bags, which is about what people use in a year, each person. And we, used an old coat or vest and safety pinned 500 bags onto it. And then someone wore a mask that was made out of a plastic pop bottle or something and wore it around. It was very, very popular. And, it was just a visual thing that people could see and they would speak about it. It was really cute. So that was our plastic monster. We have gone to Earth Days, and we have also done a whole week long of summer school with grades, I think, 1 through 4, and developed all kinds of little activities with them. I mean, first, one thing is just to even recognize what's made of plastic, to have a bunch of things, you know, on a table and let them pick them up and see if they can tell what is made of plastic in the first place. And then we just had all kinds of activities that they could do with them and, you know, where plastic comes from and how, you know, animals, they were very, very, very sympathetic with sea animals and how they were, eating plastic, mother birds picking up plastic and feeding their baby birds with plastic, thinking it was food. The thing is, it's kind of like the tobacco awareness things. The kids pick this up, and they're very concerned, and then they go home, and they are trying to pass that message on to their parents, and they feel kind of bad that they, you know, the
yeah.
whole family is still using plastic and getting plastic bags at the grocery store, but I mean, one, you know, you could just get overwhelmed with this problem, but and Kitty can talk more about it. But, you know, if you just kind of start with bringing your own bags to the grocery store or the co-op or whatever, instead of plastic, and just don't walk out with plastic bags. Sometimes I just take things in my arms rather than take it out in a plastic bag. And another thing, and a lot of people are aware of it now, just don't keep buying water in a plastic bottle. Refill your refillable bottle or thermos, a glass bottle, a stainless steel bottle. And just those two things can really reduce the amount of plastic you bring into your home.
Yeah. Brad in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to just, first of all, thank your guests for the advocacy work they're doing. It's fantastic and really needed. I wish that everyone could go visit a material recovery facility, one of these recycling centers where they actually process the material. I did want to say that the sort of 6% figure for the amount of plastic that gets recycled, or the percent that gets recycled, is a little misleading, because that's sort of all plastics. But there are certain types of plastics, PET number one plastic and HDPE number two plastic on those resin codes, that actually have much higher rates. So if you put a detergent jug or a milk jug or a water bottle or a soda bottle made of plastic into your recycling bin in Wisconsin, it's virtually certain that that material will get recycled. Now, I'm no booster of the plastics industry, and I think the reduce idea is right on target. But I don't want people to have the impression that if they put recycling into a recycling bin, material that can be recycled, that it doesn't get recycled. That's not true.
Yeah, especially the ones and twos.
Right.
The ones and twos are recyclable everywhere in Wisconsin, yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. And you guys are fully aware of that, I'm sure.
Right. But again, you know, the recycling center has to find a market. And granted, the market for the ones and twos are more available than for the rest of it. It used to be that you could take, you know, one through seven to your recycling center and they'd be able to do something with it. And now that is not the case. So certainly we recommend that when people are grocery shopping or, you know, just looking for anything, that they just start switching from plastic, any kind of plastic, to something that is much more sustainable. We just have to change, kind of step back to how would our grandparents have dealt this? You know, how would they make their purchasing choices and try to avoid purchasing something in plastic? And it's tricky, especially starting out. We have a website, VerocaPlasticFree.org, and back in December of 2024, we posted a blog on 52 weeks to plastic free. It just gives you one idea each week of the year of what you can do to reduce your use of plastic. And certainly using cloth shopping bags is a big one. Using a glass or metal water bottle is great. But just the idea of perhaps if you eat lunch and instead of, you know, going out and getting all the plastic paraphernalia when you pick up your lunch, just bring a bowl, a plate, you know, a utensil to work, and you can eliminate all that waste that is sitting there, you know, at the end of your meal.
I do that myself, actually. I have brought to sitting in the file cabinet right next to my my desk, because I usually have breakfast in the morning here, and or lunch, and I use the same utensils that I use at home. So there you go. Stephen Mount Pleasant has something. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'd like to talk about ownership. If we could change the laws so that if plastic has a logo on it, that the company is responsible for the life cycle of that product. Why should my tax dollars be paid for cleaning ditches when there's all this stuff in there from all the burger joints?
Yeah. Comment on that, Kitty?
The lobbies for the plastic manufacturers are very strong. They have a lot of money, and there is, despite efforts in various states to ban plastic or to, you know, push for some type of a circular economy, the strength of the lobbying industry, you know, has been unsuccessful. Even in the state of Wisconsin, back in 2015, Wisconsin Act 302 was passed, which prohibits local communities from banning or charging for, say, a plastic bag or, you know, your styrofoam carryout container. And that is was developed, the language for this law was developed by an industry lobbyist for the American Legislative Exchange Council. And so, unfortunately, our Wisconsin legislators bought into that, and so they have passed that law, and now a community can not ban plastic bags as much as they would like to. And so,
why get around the banning? Why not go right to the ownership issue if it's got their logo on it? It's there.
Well, exactly. You know, I think we have to, our approach is to say, okay, maybe a community can't ban this, but people can voluntarily kind of vote with their pocketbook, so to speak, and just not buy these things. But again, the idea of passing legislation that is going to be prohibitive for these giant manufacturing companies is a challenge, because we have to get our politicians on board with the idea that plastic is toxic, you know, to the environment, to our health, and they're not there yet.
Yeah. Kate in La Crosse will give you a chance. Hi, Kate. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned about plastic also, but, you know, I've written a lot of letters to politicians, but I've also contacted, like, the five major companies that are the worldwide polluters with plastic: PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Lever, you know, there's like five or six major companies. And, you know, you talk to a representative there, or you send a letter to the president, and you just get like a little greenwash back, you know. Is there any efforts nationally, locally, statewide, to lobby those corporations, which are the major polluters of plastic, actually?
There are a number of international and national organizations beyond plastics in the United States here. Break Free from Plastic, which is an international organization. All these large groups are involved in the plastic treaty that went on for several years, and nothing really came out of it, just because those in power, you know, are just using their money and using their influence to not make any progress or to dilute the intention of the suggestions to the point that they are ineffective. So, yes, we have to start at the top and do what we can, but we also have to start from the bottom. And I think that, like the organic movement, that kind of started from the bottom, and now it has really gained momentum because people were buying organic food, they were insisting upon organic options. And I think the same is going to be true with plastic. If when we shop, we are just not buying the products that come in plastic, and perhaps contacting the company and saying, I love your product, but I'm not going to buy it until it comes in a sustainable container, one that is guaranteed to be recycled, like, you know, glass or stainless steel, something like that. But I think we have to put the squeeze from the top and the bottom on the plastic manufacturers.
I totally agree.
Don,
so thank you for your call.
Yeah, thanks for those comments. Appreciate it. Don and Madison, can you address all the plastic that is not even recycled at health facilities, all the medical supplies that are not sharps? are tossed after using it. Is there a way to recycle this major generating waste?
I don't believe so, simply because if it has been contaminated with blood or, you know, whatever might be on it, even when plastic food containers are dirty, that can contaminate a whole batch of plastic and make it not recyclable. So I'm not, you know, 100% familiar with the hospital, the medical situation. They certainly have, you know, jumped on board with using plastic simply because it can be single use and thrown away, and, you know, there's no chance of, you know, germs getting spread around and that type of thing, which is one of the pluses. But there's just so much going on that is not recyclable at all.
We are, let's see, let me take another question. From Stefan, says that the socio-environmental issues will remain so long as the petroleum lobby keeps pressuring society. But here are two simple countermeasures. Bring a bag to the store for your shopping and straw for your drink. No thanks.
Right, right. I think, yeah, there's a lot of things we can do at the local level, and you may feel like it's just emptying a bathtub with a teaspoon. But as Kitty said, you know, you can make your purchasing choices. If we're doing them, you know, on a large scale, we can show that we don't want these things coming in unrecyclable or unusable, reusable containers. So our group, we realize there's just a whole huge picture legally, you know, industrial-wise, and you can get involved in that way. And I think, you know, every group needs to just pick an area that they want to focus on and try to work on that, because we could make ourselves just sick trying to address absolutely everything. But we have done a lot of fun activities for people that have made people much more aware of the plastic problem. And, yes, there are national organizations that are working on legislation, and you could get involved that way. One, I can list a few activities that we have done that have been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And Kitty and come up with this too. We have coordinated with the Chamber of Commerce. They put on an event, several events, mainly during the warmer season of the year, called Soup. This might be something that goes on in other communities too. And they serve soup, and then they have some nonprofit organizations that come and give a pitch, and all the people who paid for soup, all that money goes into a pot, and then the people who came vote, and one of the nonprofit organizations gets the money from all the soup that was purchased. Well, we said we could do this waste-free, and we can show people that you're going to have a whole crowd. You can have 500 people, 100 people, and there's no trash at the end. So guess what we did? I mean, we just came up with washable containers. And
sure.
So we're doing it, and so we're showing by example. You do not have to pull out a stack of styrofoam cups. We did used to wash dishes, and we can still wash them again. And so we're trying to do that with schools, restaurants, music festivals. Why not have stainless steel cups that can be turned back in at the end of the festival and reused? And then another thing we did at an art festival, we had a huge container, many gallons of fresh pure water that was available to dispense water, and encouraged people to come and refill their water bottles at the music festival, and instead of, you know, purchasing plastic bottles of water. We also have made a wonderful photo presentation, very, very, you know, attractive, that is traveling around the Driftless area, and it is showing local people, showing what they do to avoid plastic. So there's about 16 pictures of people in the area recognize, and they see what they're doing to, you know,
mm-hmm,
help with the plastic problem. So, Kitty, you can probably come up with more.
Well, we have also done public presentations at our local library that have been quite successful. One was on the myth of plastic recycling, because we think that's one of the most important things to get out there, that you cannot assume that your plastic product is going to be recycled, because the whole recycling issue was created to give people peace of mind. Yeah, you can buy the plastic, just put it in the bin, and it will be recycled. And we really want people to understand that that is not the case. You know, there are certain polymers that are recycled better than the 5 to 6%, but by far the majority of the plastic that's produced is not recycled. We also had one on plastic can make you sick, because one thing we haven't touched on is that most plastic products are imbued with chemicals. You know, BPA hardens the plastic. Phthalates make plastic flexible. And because plastic is often porous, not to the point that it's leaking, but, you know, when you get your plastic water bottle, those plastic particles and those chemicals are in the water, and then a person is drinking that. You know, even if you put plastic dishware in a dishwasher, the plastic chemicals, the heat, the soap, and everything just kind of releases it, kind of off-gasses a little bit, and can settle on the rest of the dishes in the dishwasher. It's recommended that you don't microwave in plastic because, again, the heat can just transfer the chemicals and the microplastics into your food. So, you know, we're just trying to encourage people to not think recycling, but think replacing. We did a blog in December of last year that we called the R's of sustainability, like they call, you know, redo, reuse, recycle. Well, we've got a whole bunch of them, you know, and starting out, you know, one of the first ones is refuse. Just the first line of defense against all waste is just simply refuse anything that you don't need and that you will not use. And it's just starting to think differently, kind of thinking, progressing backwards, you know, to the way our parents and our grandparents did things when they didn't have a choice. And it's just not that difficult. It's just getting in the habit of having some cloth bags and take them with you to the grocery store. And just thinking twice about what you're putting in your cart. And for most situations, for most items, you do have some options. You know, something might be available in plastic, but it also, the very same thing might be available in glass, and that would be a better choice.
Hmm. Lots of good things there as we talk with our two guests, Kitty Pityer and Philothea Beeson from the Viroqua Plastic Free Organization. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking about issues surrounding plastic and our use of it with our two guests from the Viroqua Plastic Free, Kitty Pityer and Philothea Beeson, and members of the Viroqua Plastic Free Organization. And lots of callers online and a bunch of emails. Let's go to Roy in Whitewater next. Roy, hi.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to ask your guest if they thought the if not for the influence of the fossil fuel industry, do you think an alternative to plastic packaging could or would be developed that would make biodegradable containers? Kind of like the, for a while they were packing cardboard boxes with corn-based packing peanuts. I used to take a handful and eat a handful once in a while for a good joke.
Well, what do you think? Kitty, I'll go to you maybe.
There's been a lot of emphasis on, you know, people trying to come up with something that would have the same benefits of plastic, but not the detrimental things. And it has been a little bit difficult simply because even, you know, the corn-based products and things like that often need to have things added to them to make them perform well. We've been looking, you know, into what could we possibly do for restaurants, you know, for carryouts, because that is typically all plastic, and it's single-use plastic, which is the worst kind of plastic. And oftentimes there are things added, you know, it can be PFAS, you know, to make it grease-resistant or, you know, repel water. But I don't think all these inventors out there have come up with anything that is really sustainable replacement. We keep checking it out, and we haven't found anything that is, yes, this is the answer. So we certainly encourage, you know, all the inventors out there to keep working in that direction, because it would be nice to have something that could be as convenient as plastic and yet not have any of the downsides. But unfortunately, we haven't run into anything yet.
Yeah. Randy in Trempealeau County, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, I know ideally the less plastic would be the best option for lots of reasons, but, you know, maybe looking into, like, having less formulas for the plastic that's out there, and maybe, you know, instead of dyed and colored and, you know, the trouble with all the sorting and you know, make, even if it eventually had to be mandated, making those plastics more uniform. And if they wanted, you know, the labeling would have to take care of all of their, you know, their advertising and color. And in combination with trying to reduce plastic, you know, maybe look into that to as another alternative or another option.
So, like, ones that make everything ones and twos, or twos, I think is kind in a way what he's getting at a little bit there, Pelethea.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, that's a wonderful idea. And I really think that if somebody came up with some replacements that really, really were effective, people would rush for them. I mean, they would really have a following. And one of the things I'm concerned about is the agricultural plastic, because you want, you know, you drive around Wisconsin, you'll see a lot of, you know, agricultural products, hay and silage that are wrapped in huge, you know, bags of plastic that are all over the farm fields, you know. And people don't even put their hay up in barns. They just, you know, bale them and wrap them up in plastic. If someone could find something that could be waterproof for a period of time, like a year or two, but would eventually break down, you know, you'd have to make farm machinery all over again to use that. But I think it would just be a tremendous breakthrough if you could come up with some things that would break down and would turn into soil eventually, and not just microplastics. So get out there and start inventing, I think, is really a wonderful idea. We did have we found out that there were some places that were trying to recycle that agricultural plastic, but it turned out that it was mostly so filthy and trampled by the animals that, you know, just cleaning the plastic before they could even begin to recycling, you know, those businesses have shut down. They tried to do it, and it was just too expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did notice in the data that we use in Wisconsin, we create about 4.7 pounds per person, but in ag, it's 15 to 20 pounds per cow of trash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, yeah.
So it's quite a bit more, for sure.
Now, with the recycling, one of the things I have a little business, we have package things. We buy things wholesale and resell them. Retail, and we just made it known in town that we accept packaging materials, and so people just bring by, you know, their bubble wrap and all their stuff that otherwise would go to the landfill, and at least we use it again. So I think it for reusing plastic, you know, I would not like to do it for food, but a lot of packaging isn't really used for food and could be reused in other ways. I mean, it's better to reuse it two or three times than to just throw it in the landfill. So we came up with an idea, too. We used to have a display table, which we've tried, like at farmers markets and so forth, and have an assortment of things like good, better, best. And so it's better maybe to have something in cardboard rather than in plastic or metal that's not lined with plastic, like cans now are mostly lined with plastic. Well, that's a problem because it's hard to recycle them if they're not all tin anymore. But anyway, to help people not get so discouraged, because if it's just black and white, don't ever buy anything ever. Our idea was, well, this is good, but there's a better choice. And then there's even the best choice, which is something that you'll never throw away, that you'll use forever. You use your whole lifetime, pass it on to your descendants. And that would be the best. So try to not discourage people and also try to make it interesting and fun for participants.
I was going to bring up the I'm wondering – now, you've been doing this in Viroqua for 8 years, I believe, your organization anyway. Mm-hmm. Have you, and your goal is education and moving, and that takes time. But mm-hmm. Are you seeing results in Viroqua from your efforts?
We had a project that we called Choose to Reuse. We had some recycled cotton cloth shopping bags printed with our logo that's, Choose to Reuse, Viroqua Plastic Free. And we wholesaled them to area businesses at just pennies above our cost and asked them to just mark it up maybe a dollar, because our goal was, once again, a lot of people can't afford a $25 cloth bag.
Yeah.
These were selling for $7 or $8, so we figured everybody could afford that. And we had wonderful response from the businesses in Viroqua. We sold, and they in turn resold to customers probably at least 400 bags. And it was an indication, people were so receptive that I think they're just looking for that little nudge, that little, this is how you can do it easily, a way to reduce plastic. And every once in a while, we don't know where all the bags went, but every once in a while when we're trotting around with our Viroqua plastic free cloth bags, we'll see somebody else kind of hold theirs up and say, yep, I've got one too. And that's just one of the easiest things that people can do. And I did want to quick mention that we do have a website, viroquaplasticfree.org. It has a number of suggestions on it. We post a monthly blog that is very informative. We have a Facebook page, and we have email. If any of your listeners want to contact us with a question or anything, viroquaplasticfree@gmail. We are always looking for new members. We are a small but mighty group, and invite anybody who is interested in this topic to contact us.
And that site, viroquaplasticfree.org, and we have links. We'll have a link to our on our website, talk@wpr.org/Larry. We'll have a link to get to your organization. Sounds like you're doing a lot of really cool things, Kitty and Philothea. And I really appreciate your time today in talking with us about it. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's kind of the way it goes here on WPR News with this show. And I'm sorry again, apologize to those we didn't get to today. Kitty Pitier and Philothea Beeson are members of Viroqua Plastic Free. Philothea is a founding member of that organization. They're doing a lot of good things, and it was great to have them with us. And great to have you listening in. Thanks so much for listening in. And thanks to our creative team for putting our shows together every day. Our producers, Clara Nyper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, our technical directors. Jeff also does some writing and other things for us, and as does Lee as well. Our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you again for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.